And this is Maeve Russell on World Watchers. We switch from the talk show to the regular one-hour World Watchers. It's broadcast number 630, January the 2nd, 1984. I suppose you think I'm going to talk about 1984. I'd like to. I brought in sections of George Orwell's book, and there's been reprints in the newspapers. There's going to be radio programs on it, and I have a few ideas on Orwell, and maybe I'll show them next week. There was a section in the San Francisco Chronicle this last week that I am particularly interested in. That's his version of the proles, P-R-O-L-E-S, the proletariat, because he feels that the lower classes, the good-natured, vast, large lower classes, make up 85% of the population of the superstate of Oceania, and that those are the people that are kept happy with recreation or different activities so that they don't rise up against the state. And if you keep them amused and they don't mass together to form a conspiracy, then you can disregard the masses and you can do what you want. So he had a lot to say about the proles, and maybe he's has a stronger conviction, 85%. Well, I really feel that 90% of the people, I always broke it down on other broadcasts, and you know how I've said it's 90% of the population are, I didn't use the word the proles or the proletariat, but the unthinking, undisturbed, unemotional, seem to not care or undeveloped mentality that maybe they have, a latent mentality they don't use. And 10% of the population think and plan and arrange, write the rules of the game, go to the law schools, become the accountants, the doctors, the heads of industries and corporations, and maintain their power, the monarchies, the ruling class. And 10% are restless and know something's wrong. And they become organizers or writers or artists or leaders of a sort to speak up and oppose these forces against each other. If they're, when I say 90% of the population, I bury the figure, maybe it's 80% of the proles, and 10% do the pushing and shoving, and 10% try to oppose them. The yin and yang is that there's an equal number doing good and an equal number doing evil. And the good people at this point have to stop the bomb, the atomic bomb, the finger on the bomb, or the space stations for genocide. And they're becoming more like proles than activists, really. But sometimes I say there's 90% proles and 5% evil and 5% good. And certainly the wealth and the minerals and the source of labor is in control of the hands of probably 10% of the country or 7%. The banks, the manufacturing, the intelligence system, the decisions, the State Department, the inner think tanks, and so forth. And Orwell had it down pretty good, how to keep them happy. Proles and animals are free, and slogans to keep them happy, and as I say, entertainment and trashy newspapers and keep their minds oozing with sex. And he had ways to keep people thinking they're free because they could do a whole range of things except decide how to get, and it's even harder now, how to get hospital payments, how to get education, how to get transportation that you can afford, how to pay your utilities or your phone, how to save anything, how to pass anything on to your children, how to retire. All those things are getting out of grasp. How to protect your home, how to buy a home. The proles, 80%, are going to wake up one day and find that there's been no provision in the last 30 years for any of those things, while the other 10% already have their children in enrolled in private schools, prep schools, getting them computers, touch phones, intercoms, and walkie-talkies, so that that inner elite have all the equipment to bypass this other element, this massive population. So we'll do more on 1984 later. I got a call the first part of this broadcast on the talk show about Larry Flynn and what's going on with Rebel. I just briefly say there's five more issues coming out of Rebel. I don't have articles in them. I sent one in November. There was no intention to use it, and there's been this conflict, and I sent a letter to Larry Flynn and said, when you're out of the federal penitentiary, when you're well and got yourself together, then we'll continue. He was simply furious. He wanted me to have one article in every single week. I talked to him in Springfield, Missouri. He called me this week. He called me again New Year's Eve. He wanted me to tape record a letter and then get it on a radio station in Palm Springs. I'll censor it for you. This is what he wanted to be delivered down there. And I had to call the home in Bel Air and then into Springfield, Missouri to his wife and his assistant there. And somebody delivered, I understand, the rebel down to Palm Springs to Annenberg's home with the pictures of Vicki Morgan and Ronald Reagan in the next issue of Rebel. I haven't seen it. And if you think that I won't be in the next five issues, but pretty soon I worked all weekend and things will iron out. He has a impossible situation of somebody there who doesn't like me, and I was supposed to be in it every week. And the only way he can bridge this gap, he hired two full-time people, one full-time, to be the go-between, if you can imagine working like that. And the person he's hired is very, very nice. He seems just a doll. There's no problem communicating with him. And somebody else was here for the weekend for 3 days and is going back down there. So there's two buffers between Larry and with Larry and me, and therefore there won't be a problem. So I'll be writing, and hopefully it'll be rolling along. This is what I tape recorded for him from his cell. He was able to call, and this is what he said. This is to be delivered. I guess it was. I'll censor some of this. I have to. Who will be our next president? It is obvious to the world that this nuclear mad cowboy, Ronnie Reagan, and his entire cabinet must resign. Reagan-gate is a scandal that should never have happened in the history of the world. Never has this planet ever had such a dumb, fascist, bigoted, you know what, world leader. You can't put in what he said. This neo-Nazi, another profanity I can't put in, has duped the whole world into believing that he was a sincere man who really wanted peace. Give us a break, Ronnie. If another country ever threatened to invade us, all you would have to do is to circle the wagon train and fire off a nuclear salvo from the center of the kingdom. I never want to hear anyone call him a senile, second-rate actor. Ronald Reagan is a German, I won't say what else, Nazi Fox personified, and he deserves an Academy Award for his role in life. And Nancy deserves to be nominated for at least the Best Actress, along with Justice Sandra O'Connor. The Best Supporting Actress is Jean Kirkpatrick for playing those phony tapes at the United Nations concerning what happened to the ill-fated flight 007, shot down by our own government in an effort to involve us in World War III. They will all be here soon, Ronnie, and the gang, that is, at the Springfield, Missouri Federal Prison Medical Center for a complete psychiatric evaluation. Maybe the prison psychiatrist, Dr. Logan, will come in for the American people. God knows we need him. Signed, Larry Flint, editor and publisher, from my cell in solitary confinement at the Federal Prison in Springfield, Missouri. I can hardly read this with a straight face because I could just hear him saying it and dictating it. And it isn't funny, it's sad. But he dictated this off and wanted to get to Ronnie at the New Year's Eve party at Annenberg's in Palm Springs. And you can see the injustice of this warmonger who is entangled with all kinds of deals and scandals and his aides and the crime syndicate and everything about him, who really shouldn't be president with these phony terrorisms and so forth. And there's Larry Flint spending his New Year's Eve in Springfield, Missouri, in solitary confinement alone, and you can see why he's pretty angry about that. Well, now we'll go on to the rest of the broadcast, tape number 630. I said before, January the 2nd, this is now 1984, officially 84. We begin with what I discussed last year, a quick summary of the best stories of 1982, because I can't check off any one of them that was solved. So we go right from 1982 through 83, and they'll merge, of course, with the stories of 1984. What you'll be hearing me broadcast on 1984 will be a continuation of news stories in the news that add to the unsolved stories, just as we update the John Kennedy assassination and the crime was never solved, or the Martin Luther King assassination. There are pieces of history, whether it's the Karen Silkwood murder or hundreds of other stories that are unsolved that could be solved. And all we have to do is open the National Archives, expose the people that are doing these things, and get on with the show and prove that this country can function without the people who keep getting promoted to do these crimes. Now, in 1982, briefly, I was talking about several banks, three banks, the Nguyen Bank, the Vatican Bank, and Banco Ambrosiano, the largest bank in Italy. The missing billions, the connection of all three with drug traffic and narcotics, with gun running, with Nazis from World War II and current Nazis, with the Central Intelligence Agency in the United States, and with assassination teams. Nothing has happened. The money hasn't been found from the Nguyen Bank, the $55 million to $1 billion. The Vatican Bank hasn't explained their $1.2 billion, their several hundred million. The Banco Ambrosiano has linked to the Vatican Bank, and they have not explained the murder of Roberta Calvi or the washing of funds back and forth with the Vatican Bank. The other second story was the Social Security system that's losing 17,000 each minute. It's losing more than that now, and the money is going to missiles and to Lebanon and to El Salvador and Nicaragua and to defeat Castro, and the money is not being put into the Social Security system. It's being spent for space stations and weapons. The domestic banks was a subject. They're short of funds. Their loans exceed their deposits, and many small banks, and not so small, continued to merge or go under this year. They're in deep trouble. The international arms sales continued, and money is sent and weapons are sent to countries that can't pay back and have to default, such as the scandals in Venezuela, Argentina, Brazil, and now we're sending $15 million to a small country like Grenada, and I don't think there's that much nutmeg to pay back these debts. We're pouring money into solidarity in other countries, Poland and elsewhere, where there's no way to put the money back into American banks. Another top story, fifth on the line, is the confessions of Frank Turpel, that his involvement with the CIA and terror from the right, and his acquaintanceship or working with Mehmet Aja, the man who was charged with killing the Pope, and Frank Turpel talking about that in 1982, and we'll update that in a minute. And also, there was the arrest of Edwin Wilson, the international terror connections of the right wing, the CIA, Navy intelligence, who was brought home last year, who this year was charged with some of his crimes of exporting weapons overseas and also wanting to kill his wife and primary witnesses. More on Wilson that continued in 83. The promotion of Opus Dei, the secret organization of Catholic fascists by the Vatican that was given a higher recognition. And then, of course, this year, the Opus Dei, the head of the Opus Dei, Mr. Herman Apps, and we'll go into that in 1983, became part of the Vatican Bank scandal, in charge of the Vatican Bank, correcting where the missing money is or hiding it or mismanaging it, mangling it around so it isn't so obvious. Last year, Apps was appointed as part of Hitler's banker with the Deutsche Bank on the board of IG Farben. He went to the Vatican Bank. That was last year, 1983. It turned out that the Opus Dei that was elevated was Herman Apps, who's the head of the Opus Dei. And so that putting him on the bank, they elevated the position. Then they controlled the thinking of the Vatican and the Pope. And then, of course, in 1983, the head of the Jesuit group was moved out. He isn't dead yet. You're supposed to be there until you're dead. He was kicked off, and a conservative Jesuit was put on to decide the politics and thinking of members of the church. Last year was the Argentina Falklands War, with the proximity to Antarctica and the Nazi haven that I've done a lot about. That was 1982. And just at the end of 1983, there were stories in the paper last week that Chile is to begin sending people to live down in Antarctica. We were told, oh, you can't live there, you can't inhabit it. The Chileans, who have the closest proximity to Hitler's Nazis outside of Argentina and share colonial dignitas with Argentina, are beginning to move down to Antarctica to begin their colonies. That was 1983. And then, of course, there that was week of June 10th to 20th, when Ronald Reagan was in London and Raymond Donovan was in Switzerland, and the Pope, and the arrest of Edwin Wilson and the death of Roberta Calvi. There was a week there of the Pope going down to Argentina and back to Switzerland, and Wilson being arrested after picking up a large hunk, many million dollars in Europe. It was a very interesting week, hard to duplicate, but we did have a few weeks this year where all events clustered together. The team seemed to meet in the same cities and scramble around to various countries. Reagan ran to Dallas, it was in London, and then to Dallas, and promised the convention would be there, the Republican convention next year. It was a frantic week. The most important information breakthrough that I made as a researcher last year was the awareness of the Sovereign Military Order of Malta in 1982, the use of the Vatican with the CIA and the Defense Department, the National Security Council, of knighting people of our government staff and people from the cabinet and from the CIA who have their first loyalty to the Vatican and then to the Roman Empire and then to the United States of America, the Williams and James Buckley and Vernon Walters, and we've gone over those people. 1982 was the year that I learned about the organization I had heard about before but began to take it seriously, and Alexander Haig was knighted in 1983, and Frank Sinatra's dream is to be knighted in 1984 to become a Knight of Malta. I learned more about Kramer versus Kramer that I've had on the air since 1982, and that is Fritz Kramer is Hitler's top general, and Fritz Kramer is Henry Kissinger's mentor, and Alexander Haig's mentor, and Mr. Sonnenfeld, and also the entire hierarchy of the Pentagon. And I've still been trying through 1983 to find out if they're the same person. Now, 1982, I was pursuing this quest, and in 1983, the General Accounting Office sent two people to my home. I've mentioned it before. We spent 9 hours going over this. I wasn't going to mention the group, but that's who they were. They were from Congressman Rodino's committee to see about Nazi war criminals in the United States. So we'll know more in 1984 because now I have two people from Washington, D.C., whose specific assignment was to check this out and was prisoner number 33 at the Dachau trial, who was released by the Nazis who put Senator Joe McCarthy into power. Was that the same Henry Kissinger who moved to the Pentagon in 1948 and who had put Henry Kissinger in the Army in 1943, who later Kissinger was in charge of Klaus Barbie? Are they the same person? So 1982, I was working on Kramer versus Kramer at the suggestion of Charles Spears in Texas. He said, who is the mentor behind Henry Kissinger? And I'm indebted to him for encouraging me to pursue this, and I did it all through 1983, so I can say with satisfaction that the last month of this year, I sat with two people from Washington and gave them all the information in the books and the correspondence and the documentation. So we're a little step further this year than we were last year. We studied last year, 1982, the continuity of Hitler's Reich from the OSS to the CIA, and a lot of breakthroughs came there. And in 1983, with the Klaus Barbie story and the rest of Barbie, the rat lines, the way that they left from Europe, the help of the Vatican, the help of the CIA, it wasn't the CIA then, it was the CIC and the OSS, how the Nazis specifically were put into defense industry, were sent to South America, were hidden from the Americans by people like John McCloy and Alan Dulles, who end up in the Warren Commission that I wrote about with Rebel. I learned a lot in 1983, but the breakthrough of those people came in 1982. The banking scandals in 1982 forced the establishment media to expose more pieces of the puzzle, such as Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Washington Post. Stories that they were sitting on in 1982 just began to surface in 1983, has seen more pieces, such as Mr. Saxon with the missing gold, or with the, they even carry a lot on John DeLorean and the missing money. And the establishment has been forced to face some of the money problems of the Nugenhand Bank that they started in 82 and occasionally carry stories. They don't have the answers, but they're putting in the pieces. So when Alan David Saxon is dead and the $60 million is missing, they do carry stories about that. And so the banking scandals are getting more attention. And then in 82, I learned more about Antarctica and the Defense Department and the Germans and secrecy. And so in 1983, the activities down in Antarctica are escalating and the colonies are starting and the secrecy and exclusion of certain people, I'm sure will continue, but they are breaking away both in the moon and the space stations, and even if you saw the newspapers, the Soviet Union is planting colonies on Mars. Before 1982, I was talking about Alternative 3 and the plans to eliminate 80% of the population, the United States, working with the Soviet Union in the book Alternative 3, to get rid of 80% of the population of the country and ship them out, use them as slaves, or kill them, actually genocide, getting them off planet Earth so that it is in the hands of the few again and not the proles. And just this week, there was an article that the Soviet Union is thinking of sending 80% of their population up to Mars. Now, we were told Mars was hundreds of years away. Maybe they're lying about how far Mars is, but that means if you're sending 80% to Mars, they're never going to come back. You don't have to feed them or house them or so forth. But the intent of the United States to have colonies on the moon and on Mars has been in the newspaper this week, and that connects also to the experiments in Antarctica. Now, I'm not going to run down a lot of deaths that happened in 1983. I may make a complete list. We have our usual ones on the standard ABC, NBC, and the newspapers. They run down who died during the year, but the ones that I'm interested, maybe we have a few in common. I'm interested in the death of Maurice Bishop, how his death was planned, how Sir Eric Gary from Grenada can go up to Dr. Peter Byrne at the UN, his offices in Washington, and go to Mr. Califano, Health, Education, Welfare, who's from the Defense Department, the CIA, and how they can begin the plans to overthrow Grenada and get Maurice Bishop dead so Sir Eric Gary can come back. And he's part of the Nazi crime syndicate, the organized crime and the Pinochet Nazis, the melding of those two. Mr. Pinochet helped arm Sir Eric Gary, and now there are articles in the Washington Post, New York Times, that London Times, he's ready to come back. Maurice Bishop's death took place just in October 19th, 1983, but it was planned by July 79 to take over the whole place and get rid of him and make that little piece of land with 100,000 people safe for organized crime and for fascism again. Waldo Duberstein died last year. He was a primary witness along with other people in the trial against Edwin Wilson or Frank Turpel, who's still out on the loose, or George Corgula, who's very silently in jail. Kevin Mulcahy died, Rafael Villaverde, William Cranford, Ricardo Morales, and Waldo Duberstein. So he had five major witnesses to the Edwin Wilson CIA terror on the right that died. Cardinal Cook got a cancer very swiftly. He was in touch or close with John DeLorean, and when that case broke, all of a sudden he had like a quick Martha Mitchell, or quicker than that, a Jack Ruby cancer, and Cook went on to the beyond. Chester Davis, the attorney for the Hughes Organization, passed away. That wasn't his name at all. He took on an Americanized name. He was an Italian who headed the Howard Hughes Organization and took over the major structure of the Howard Hughes economy and helped buy up the casinos in Vegas. He never saw Howard Hughes. At his hands, the properties were bought in Vegas, and the empire was both built up and destroyed, and Chester Davis died last year. John Hinckley Jr. was found not guilty by reason of loving Jodie Foster too much, and Dan White is now out of Soledad with the Twinkie defense that he drank Coca-Cola and ate Twinkies. At first, this defense of Dan White for killing the mayor in San Francisco, George Moscone, and the supervisor, Harvey Milk, was that he got some kind of a high on his Coca-Cola and Twinkies. And when he did that, he freaked out, so he sneaks through a window with a loaded gun so the office or the opening detector at the city hall won't pick it up, and then shoots the mayor and then reloads the gun and shoots the supervisor. He didn't stop for Twinkies or Coca-Cola in between, but he loaded up. Well, he's out of Soledad prison, and John Hinckley will soon be out of St. Luke's in Washington, I imagine. And they had a very nice team of lawyers that defended them, and they're on their way out. Larry McDonald died. We've talked about that many times. The head of the Birch Society and Western Goals, part of the Terror Murder Incorporated in the Atlanta, Georgia area. Very powerful man. Went down in the great 007, and Vicki Morgan the paramour of Alfred Bloomingdale, from the House, the Intelligence Advisory Committee, CIA Bloomingdale is a 12-year associate who satisfied his needs with his sadomasochism and also lived with Bernie Kornfield simultaneously, traveled around the world. She had her head cracked open with a baseball bat, and that was the end of her and her book about sex in the White House or for government agents and her traveling with various heads of states around the world. Alan David Saxon died. He had $60 million diverted from the Commercial Bank of California or the Gold Bullion. Actually, it wasn't in that bank, but he did have money in that bank and was tied in with the people in California that I'll talk about in a few minutes. He died, and it was supposed to be a suicide, and now they've held up the inquiry because it wasn't a suicide, I'm sure, at all. And the money was supposed to go to Brazil, but didn't go to Brazil. It was supposed to go to Switzerland. There's $60 million missing out of that, and added up to, the Nugent Hand and the Bank of Ambrosiana and the Vatican Bank. There are hundreds of millions of dollars unaccounted for that are in somebody's banks. Somebody's using it. And I'll continue next week on the Hitler diary that $5 million from Stern went to the existing Waffen-SS, to Hitler's driver, Hitler's pilot, Mr. Wilhelm Monkey, all the Nazis, SS Karl Wolf, the entire organization, the Waffen-SS, just picked up $5 million by saying they had a diary of Hitler's. And so that's kind of interesting to make a few bucks in that many days. And I'll continue finishing the Hitler diary that I talked about last week because we didn't really complete that story. Now to the most interesting stories of this year. I went through the various broadcasts that I did, and it was just an amazing year. And I thought I would talk about that tonight because every week goes very fast, and you have 52 weeks of information, and many of you have these tapes and the sheets and the broadcasts, but I thought I would just kind of summarize it because they go fast, and what I talk about is not a separate thing. If I mention the top stories through the months of this past year, it's because each relates to the other, and at various times on those broadcasts, I'll make those connections, and they're very important because there's an overall picture or a plan to control labor, resources, or housing, or weapons, minerals, and the wealth of the world in the hands of those 5 or 10% that the proles are supposed to work for. So the stories that I carried are not separate. I might say that this is probably the best year I've had for research and investigation because while I was putting away a lot of individual pieces, everything began to fall into place in 1982. And in 1983, many of the missing pieces of trying to figure out who's doing the controlling or the pushing or shoving fitted together. There are very few people who can hang into a thing, say, for 20 years. And, well, there are inventors and there are people that try to cure diseases and they work with a particular thing many years. There's only a few people who can really reach what they want in any given number of years in their lifetime. And many, after they pass away, the pieces come together that they started that weren't completed. But I've had the satisfaction of working 20 years research. I still have 1 year to go because I really started when John Kennedy was killed. So this is the 20th anniversary of his death. But at the end of the year, I will have completed 20 years. But the pieces that I put together fit well and relate, and one or two names or banks go in common to the next subject, to the next subject, and they flow and relate to each other. So it's really been an exciting year and one of satisfaction. I never worked so hard, but I never enjoyed the work so much because it was right and the answers were right and there was no confusion about the people or the characters. The same names keep reappearing and appearing over again. As a matter of fact, there was an article in the paper today that I'll do more on next week. A friend called attention to it. It says, expert studies the Granada documents. And it's out of Associated Press in our Monterey Herald. American experts are surprised how many Soviet and Cuban were indoctrinated in Granada and Marxist philosophy. Well, the article is written by Michael Ledeen, a Soviet affairs expert known for his conservative views and a special assistant to former Secretary of State Alexander Haig. Well, when Sir Eric Gehry wanted to overthrow Maurice Bishop, he goes to Mr. Califano, who was the man who put the oak leaf clusters on Haig, who works with Haig and Kissinger, And Michael Ledeen is the guy that pushed that Bulgarian plot, that there was a KGB plot to kill the Pope or try to kill the Pope. He whipped that dead horse for a year and a half. He's a propagandist that works with Claire Sterling and Alexander Haig and the Georgetown Center for Strategic Studies. So when somebody comes out to tell you about all these planted Marxist documents, it's like finding, again, the Lee Harvey Oswald diary down in Granada, the evidence, all these papers. He's so amazed. The article says that they're amazed to find so much. Why did they invade the island if they didn't expect to find it? And if the news media wasn't there when this happened, then how do we know it wasn't planted? But again, it's Michael Ledeen being the man who's telling you about the Marxism of poor Maurice Bishop. We'll take a 1-minute break now and then go quickly to the top stories of 1983.